HOU File, the Ultimate Texans Podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
Let's talk Texans. Let's do it. It's the HOU Files. The Houston Texans, our topic. Matt Hammond from Sports Radio 610 joins us. You find him on Twitter at Matt Hammond Show. Matt, as we look back on week two, got to be feeling good to be able to come away with a victory, especially one at home over a pretty good Kansas City team, a team that some people think has a good shot to win the AFC West. Before we dive into some specifics in the game, just your overall feel coming out of that game.
I mean, I think if you look at that game, the Texans yesterday, they have Brock Osweiler throw a pick down in the red zone. They were on the goal line. Later, he throws a bad pick that Marcus Peters, Kansas City's cornerback, brings all the way back to the 49. They have one call by the ref go against them on a fumble recovery that should have been a turnover. They have another call where DeAndre Hopkins clearly scores a touchdown, but it's not overturned on review, and they still won by 7 points. Like, to beat a team like that in the NFL where you make mistakes and bad stuff happens, that's the hallmark of a good team. Because I'll give you an example. I mean, if you look at this team just last year, Brian Hoyer didn't throw a single interception in the regular season. He didn't have a single game in the regular season where he had two interceptions, and yet the team was only 5-4 in his starts. So you had relatively little error, and even then, that wasn't enough oftentimes. So it's just really refreshing for the Texans. Yes, you've got to clean it up. That's not going to fly on a short week, Thursday night on the road against the Patriots in Foxborough. But look, when you don't have to be perfect, that's just such a nice place to be when you're an NFL team. Ben Roethlisberger yesterday throws two interceptions. Trevor Siemian has a interception. But you know what? The Steelers and the Broncos are really, really good teams. Andrew Luck, on the other hand, he's got to be perfect. So I just think if you look at that game, and really even the Bears game, there's been a lot of sloppiness for the Texans on both sides of the ball, and yet they're still coming out with comfortable wins. I think that's a lot to feel good about if you're a Texans fan.
Well, and I think, Matt, some of it comes from the fact that, you know, let's talk about Houston's defense in the game on Sunday against the Chiefs, because, you know, you can talk about Brock Osweiler throwing two picks, and you know, we can break down quarterback rating and QBR, and even though Brock's wasn't exactly strong, you know, the Texans' defense made Alex Smith even worse. His QBR was just over 10. So, you know, clearly the defense improving, the defense, you know, getting healthy, things like that are what can help not put so much pressure on Brock Osweiler's shoulders. Talk about the defense that you saw against the Chiefs.
It's so huge. I mean, you have J.J. Watt, Vince Wilfork, and Jadeveon Clowney, and that's just a defensive line. I mean, like, right there, you're already talking about as much disruption and as much chaos just on the defensive line, really, as there is in the NFL. And I looked this up because J.J. Watt, let's be honest, he's, if not Lawrence Taylor, Bruce Smith, Reggie White, you could argue he's better. He may be a step below, but even then, he's in that conversation. You go back and look at some of those Giants teams and some of those Packers teams and some of those Bills teams, they had Lawrence Taylor, Bruce Smith, Reggie White, but there wasn't really a whole lot else by way of pass rushers around them. I mean, Whitney Mercilus, guy coming off the edge, AFC Defensive Player of the Week last week. John Simon, who I don't think anybody outside of Houston, I don't even think they know who you're talking about. He sounds like a songwriter. He leads the team with 2.5 sacks. So, I mean, I was looking at this. The Texans right now with 9 sacks, they're on pace to tie the NFL record for team sacks set by the 84 Chicago Bears. That's 72. But just whatever the statistics are, just in terms of potential, like, I really can't think of a team that's as loaded at pass rusher type positions, J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, Whitney Mercilus, even a guy like John Simon, as this Texans team. So yeah, as much as quarterback is a premium position offensively, disrupting the quarterback on the other side of the ball, it the value really can't be overstated. So, yeah, that's there are a lot of strengths on this Texans team, but, yeah, the pass rush is it's up there.
So in addition to that pass rush, we know that you know, a lot of times when you've got a front seven, as we look across the teams in the NFL, when you've got a front seven that can cause that kind of disruption, then you wind up with a secondary that's able to shake things up as well. Did you see strengths out of the secondary? Are those two phases of the defense playing off each other?
Yeah, I think that Kevin Johnson is – he was their number one over – or he was their top pick 2 years ago. I really do think that he's an emerging talent in the league. And much like a lot of the Texans players, because they don't really, you know, they don't have these huge personalities. They're not out there. Odell Beckham Jr., Dez Bryant, you know, they're not, for instance, at the cornerback position, you know, Josh Norman, I got to hear about, you know, is he doing analyst duties for Fox, or is he following this wide receiver? Is he the best cornerback, Richard Sherman, Patrick Peterson? I mean, these guys just show up and do their job. So Kevin Johnson is an absolute stud. Jonathan Joseph, I don't know how this guy hasn't hit a wall yet. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's 30, 31, 32 years old. He's had a litany of injuries, and yet he's as solid a cornerback as there is. I think that Kareem Jackson playing the nickel, and he does play some outside, I think that he's good with run support, but he's gotten picked on a couple of times in pass coverage. Alshon Jeffrey, especially 2 weeks ago, but then even yesterday, there were a couple of plays. I think the safety... they play well, but I don't know that they're good players, the Texans' two safeties. And so I think they're, you know, if you were looking for fantasy football purposes, if you were looking for matchups, like whatever tight end is playing the Texans, that guy's probably going to have a big day. But I think that, you know, you got to remember, in a salary cap sport where you've only got 7 draft picks per year, every team's going to have holes. So maybe if you look at the Texans, you know, a couple of spots in the offensive line, they've had some injuries. Maybe that's a thin spot. But the safeties in one corner position, if that's the worst that it is on the team, I mean, you'll take it if you're head coach Bill O'Brien.
When you look at the where the Texans sit, you know, Matt, one of the things that's got to feel pretty good is when you look around the league on Sunday and you see the Colts lose, you see the Jags lose as well. Tennessee picked up the win against Detroit, but at the same time, the Texans sit alone at the top of the AFC South at 2-0. You know, knowing that there are some tough games in the schedule, especially kind of midway through for the Texans, these are, I don't want to call them must wins because that's kind of an overstatement, but, you know, these are the games that you get in your pocket so that hopefully you can afford a slip up later on. So how big has it been to start off 2-0 at home, and what's the expectation then to go on the road against the Patriots on Thursday?
Oh, it's huge. And if you look since 2007, the Texans have the most wins in week 1 and week 2 in the NFL. Since 2010, the Texans have the most wins in week 1 and week 2 in the NFL. That's according to ESPN stats and information. So they've done a really good job of getting off to hot starts. Now, granted, in 2013, when they went 2-14, those were the last games that they won. They were the only games that they won. So you can't go falling off of a cliff. But, I mean, if you go look at the schedule, they've caught a lot of breaks by virtue of other teams suffering injuries. I mean, with the Patriots, they're down not only Tom Brady for Deflategate, but likely Jimmy Garoppolo, possibly Rob Gronkowski. Rob Ninkovich is out with a PED ban. Then you go down to Minnesota, Teddy Bridgewater's out. Adrian Peterson, torn meniscus. He could be out a couple of games. Xavier Rhodes, even the safety, all the way down. I mean, San Diego, Danny Woodhead out, Keenan Allen out. If you look at a lot of these games, and especially two of them on the road, New England and Minnesota, they've caught some breaks here. So as much as you could argue maybe they didn't luck out from the schedule makers coming up with such a tough schedule, with the way that things have shaken out for those teams and some of the injuries they've suffered, it more than cancels it out.
What are you expecting on Thursday night, Matt? Give me a prediction.
Oh, man, you can't on a short week. I don't know that you can bet against Belichick. I mean, I said this the other night, is that that win that he had on opening night against the Cardinals, it's a primetime game, you're on the road, you're down Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, Rob Ninkovich, who, if you put those guys on any team in the league, that's a playoff team, and they were without that. Like, you could really argue that that was the finest win of Belichick's career, given what he had and what he didn't have, just the resourcefulness of Belichick. So I'll say this, the Texans should win. I mean, if you're going up against a rookie quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, in his first start, I know Sam Bradford did really, really well for Minnesota last night and what was his first start, but he had at least been preparing to be the starter all offseason for the Eagles. And then he had been preparing to be the starter for 2 weeks in Minnesota. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, it's, all right, kid, batter up. So given the premium on the quarterback position, you'd like to say that the Texans would win and maybe even cover the point spread, 2.5 points. They're favorites in Vegas. But it's, man, how do you bet against Belichick? I think gun to my head, I'll say, yeah, even on the road, even in Foxborough, tough place to play, I'll say that, yeah, the Texans win and they cover.
All right, there he is, Matt Hammond. You find him on Sports Radio 610 in Houston. You find him on Twitter at Matt Hammond Show. Matt, always appreciate the insight with Houston. Thank you.
Always good catching up.
There goes Matt. Up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of 6 or 7 different coordinators, therefore 6 or 7 basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got 2 games under Carson Wentz's belt and 2 wins. Granted, 1 against Chicago, 1 against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule maker certainly made it certainly an easier pass for this rookie to start out when talking about the 2 teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something, but that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, there's Julian Edelman, those are some pretty good inside targets to help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable. The good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. It's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the L.A. Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl run. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing, you talked about the running game, is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Viking defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good, but they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense, and Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball particularly well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards. His best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. The fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they wouldn't be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends and let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and send them, you know, throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact that he goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense, Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slim down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. But the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay, they like that no huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense, control the clock a little bit more, and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and, of course, 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something in today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top 10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that clearly that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top 10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving core with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burress, and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out Deal Score that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, it's great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, you know, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, you know, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. You know, I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, question number four, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrell Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrell Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right, final question in our six-pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I'd give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's Coach of the Year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off, because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But yeah, I mean, that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.